We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This episode of the Platinum Sombrero Podcast is brought to you by Edgar Allan Poe Pourri. Want to freshen up your bleak existence? Try new Edgar Allan Poe Pourri, the avant-garde line of room freshening essence. With new scents like Annabelle Lemon, Rose Gold Bug, and Cherry Pit in the Pendulum, you'll be able to fend off that gothic sense of impending death, and you'll smell great doing it. Quoth the Raven, this room smells fantastic. Edgar Allan Poe Pourri, patent pending.
+51,000 on their feet. Nobody's left to beat the traffic tonight, I guarantee you. Mark gets the sign. The wind and the pitch, here it is. Swung, fly ball deep left center. Grissom on the run. Yes! Atlanta Braves have given you a championship.
25 lighters on my dresser. Yes, sir. You know I got to get paid.
Five lighters on my dresser, yes sir. You know I got to get paid. Swing and drive, left to right. Welcome to the show. 25
lighters
on
my 25 folks.
Gonna break the bank. Now get ready. This is the Platinum Sombrero Podcast with your hosts Dylan Short and Adam Doc Herbert.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Platinum Sombrero, brought to you by Armchair All-Americans and our friends at SeatGeek. Taking a second just to let you know a little bit more about them. SeatGeek is one of the top web apps for ticket buying purchases, whether you're talking about a sporting event or a concert or a play or whatever you might need a ticket to. SeatGeek has you covered there. Their app is really easy to use. The best part about it is their app is really, really high tech. They end up going around the internet, scouring all the tickets, telling you whether it's a good seat or a bad seat based on reviews from other ticket buyers. They'll tell you if the price is a fair price or not. And more than that, you don't just have to buy your ticket with them. If you sell your ticket with SeatGeek, then it tells you what is a fair price to charge for your particular seat. Now, you guys know my thing with seat fees. You guys know I absolutely hate seat fees, and I think they might be one of the worst inventions of all of mankind. Well, unfortunately, SeatGeek does still have that. But they do have a special. If you use our promo code ACAA at the checkout, they're going to give you $20 off, which essentially pays for that seat fee. So as long as I'm not having to pay that, then it's pretty much gone to me. So if you use SeatGeek, make sure you use my promo code ACAA. Get that $20 off at the checkout. Get the best seats possible. SeatGeek, life's an event, and we have the tickets. All right, so before we get too deep into the baseball discussion, I just have to say, Doc, I missed you so much.
Hey, I missed you too, buddy. It's really good to be back, man. Last week was the second time since we started doing the show that I wound up taking the week off because we didn't do one Thanksgiving last year and regretted it immediately. And don't get me wrong, I had an absolutely tremendous time. I was riding a gondola in Venice while you and Jordy were crushing it last week. But yeah, man, it's good to be back and ready to talk some baseball again.
We're ready to talk baseball. There's a lot to talk about. There's a lot to get Doc's thoughts on about last week since he was not there and I missed him so terribly. I'm just happy that the show didn't burn down without him, that I managed to limp across to get him back home. But joining us today is one of our good friends, somebody we've wanted on the show for a long time. If you hear his voice, it's one of the most distinctive voices in Braves country, unless you're Matt Kritzberg, and then you could be forgiven for thinking they're the same people, but they are not. Joining us today is Clay Beck. Clay, what's going on, buddy?
Nothing much, guys. What's going on with y'all?
It's good to get you on, man. In case anybody was wondering, part of why we were so fervent about getting Clay on the show is when we did the co-hosting contest that Jordy actually won. We both kind of howled with laughter at the video that you sent in, and we said, I almost feel like we just need to get him on as a regular guest. So, you know, we're really, really excited to get you on, man, and excited to get your stunning insight. I know you have plenty.
I have some ideas floating around here and there on occasion.
Some stuff around the old
noob. Thanks for having me on.
It should be a very fun episode, but let's get right into this. Doc, tell us about your favorite parts of Italy. I have never been to Italy. I have never been out of the country on a pleasure trip. So describe to me so I can live vicariously what it was like going to a place as sophisticated as Italy.
Well, my wife, Valerie, is very regimented. She's a scheduler, you know, and even vacation isn't that much of a relaxing time. Like, even when we do beach vacations, it winds up being that we wind up doing a whole bunch of stuff. So when you go to Italy, there's obviously a lot of really cool things to see. So, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of sleeping in, anything like that. It was wake up and go to the Duomo in Florence, which is a church that was built in like 14th century or so. Climb 465 steps to the top, and then you just see Florence, or just roofs as far as you can see, and mountains in the distance. And I mean, it's like everywhere you go in the entire country is picture worthy, and it's like the whole country's a museum. Around here, you see a building that's 100 years old, you're like, wow, that's ancient. Over there, everything is 700 years old, and we're walking on cobblestones that were laid in 1200 or whatever. You know, it's super cool. We hit all the tourist stuff. We did the Vatican Museum. We did St. Peter's and the Sistine Chapel. All of that is as advertised. We went to the Colosseum and the Forum. Like I said, we went to the Duomo and the Bell Tower. We did a wine tour in Tuscany, and we kind of got hammered in the daytime. Kind of nothing. We just got hammered in the daytime. And then in Venice, I mean, Venice is right on the water, so like the gondola thing, it's like a staple of being there, but like it's so quiet because it's on the water. You don't have the cars and everything. Like you'll have some boat traffic that goes by, but it's pretty serene, you know, and it was nice, relaxing, but it was cold. Like that was the craziest thing about it. It was like, it's as far as longitude, I think it's like Boston or Montreal. Like it's a lot farther north than we're used to in Atlanta here. So it was pretty chilly. I got kind of sick over there. But also got a chance to go up into the mountains. We went up in the Dolomites, which is basically like the Alps, and got to see some snow caps in the middle of May. It was up in Cortina, which is where they're doing, it's not the Winter Olympics, but it's like the Alpine World Skiing Championships in this tiny little Italian mountain town where it's like some of the most unbelievable mountain peaks I've ever seen in my life. Best vacation I've ever been on. And I hate it when people say, now I need a vacation from my vacation, but I get it. I'll just say it like that. It was exhausting. It was cool. And anybody who's listening to this, even if Italy's not on your bucket list, Italy is on your bucket list. You just don't know it yet. So
how much pizza did you eat?
Not as much as you might think, but it's not everything. That's pretty hyperbolic, but most of the food over there is carbs with cheese. Some variation on it. You
know
what I mean?
Perfect.
What's that?
That's absolutely perfect. You just described like my dream food heaven. If it has cheese on it, I will eat it.
Oh, and this
cheese and wine, that's all you need.
Yeah, I mean, by the end of the week, I was really, really craving some vegetables, which does seem kind of preposterous. But yeah, it was, God, it was wonderful. The food is as advertised. The coffee is as advertised. The wine is as advertised. Every single thing about it, like pictures don't really do it justice. That's why I haven't really posted a lot from the trip, because I mean, even I didn't even want to look up some of these things beforehand, just because I wanted to have it be brand new when you first get there. And I'm glad. The Colosseum is freaking huge, but yeah, it was awesome. So go there. Everybody speaks English. All the signs are in English. If you want to do international travel, You know, don't start with Cambodia. Start with somewhere like Italy or Australia, where it's like it's a foreign country, but it's really not that foreign.
So what you're saying is I shouldn't take a holiday in Cambodia.
Not first. No, I would not. I would not start with Cambodia.
Clay, I hear you chuckling. I'm assuming you got that little reference there.
Yes, but I can't remember the band now.
Dead Kennedys, bro.
Was it Guns N' Roses?
No, it's Dead Kennedys, bro.
Dead Kennedys, sorry. Yeah.
Oh, but whatever. well, Doc, when you were gone, when you left, the Braves were in kind of a bit of a conundrum. They had just gotten obliterated by the Dodgers, and you and I freaked out about Max Fried almost going down.
Yeah, that was scary.
Luckily, since then, they look like a totally different ball club. I have some thoughts on what energized them, namely Ronald Acuna going back to the leadoff spot. But how's for you two? Has it been more of an excitement or a relief? Because for me, I've just been breathing a sigh of relief that the Braves are back to looking good. I was really worried there for a second.
Go ahead, Clay.
It's definitely a relief. I mean, a lot of experiments, a lot of change in the lineup, you know, seeing what works and a lot of it didn't. And, you know, getting back to the old school, you know, Ronald Acuna at leadoff, hitting dingers, it feels like home, man.
No, that's a really good way to say it. I mean, and everybody knew that there was going to come a time where Stitt was going to say, all right, we tried it this other way and it's just not working. And the fact that the Ender got injured when he did was it's like universal interference, like getting in and saying, what are you doing? Put Acuna back at leadoff, you know? And even when Ozzy was there, he was okay, but there was still something lacking. And now he's the straw that's stirring the drink. You know, he's got four home runs. He's putting pressure on immediately. The other night against Andrew Suarez, he homered on the first pitch of the game. You know, that was the first pitch that Suarez had thrown in the majors all season long. I mean, that's the type of thing that you have to do to get out ahead. So the night I left, yeah, they had just lost their fourth straight game. And I kept my phone off for most of the trip. So imagine my surprise when I eventually turned it on. I'm like, oh, my God, we're on a run right now. And what is Austin Riley doing up? I missed that whole thing, which that's, you know, you talked about Acuna being a good reason for the offense kind of turning it around. Austin Riley just being here has been massive, massive energy to the team. It's similar to when Acuna showed up last year.
It really is, and there was a lot to unpack there. So I want to start this off with Acuna. First off, if Brian Snicker ever tries to move him down in the order again, I want Walt Weiss to like physically tie him up. I don't know what he's going to tie him up with, but find something in that dugout or in that clubhouse and physically like tie him to a chair. Do not.
The whole city of Atlanta would riot if that were to happen.
I mean, just like we did the first time. I don't know why it took. I'm glad he did it early in the season. I guess people are trying to give him props for doing it when he did. I'm not giving you props. Like, dude, you saw what happened last year. Why were you trying to mess with what worked? I'm just glad it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. Acuna is more comfortable there. Acuna is a completely dynamic player. Lo and behold, when your dynamic player is the one that leads off the game, good things have a tendency to happen. You tend to score runs in the first inning, which tends to bode well for you for the rest of the game. So congratulations for finally going back to what worked and getting Ozzy and Ender out of the leadoff spot. But one thing about Acuna that I've really noticed, and maybe you guys have noticed it too, I'm not sure. Have you guys noticed at just how good Ronald Acuna is at hitting balls off the outside of the plate and hitting them as a tank job? I don't know if I've ever seen somebody that hits a ball that's a full baseball, maybe a baseball and a half off the plate, and just yanks it dead center.
No doubt. And that's part of why he belongs at the top. It's not like you've got to try really hard to figure out exactly where you're going to pitch him to where he's not going to, even if he's not hitting a double or hitting a home run or something, like he can find a way to be a pest, put the ball in play, you know, move the runner over, whatever he's got to do. And it's similar to somebody like Vlad Guerrero Jr. The best way to pitch to him is just kind of cross your fingers and hope whatever you're doing is working.
I mean, yeah, his bat speed and his play vision are elite. And, you know, he can catch up to stuff on the inside super easily, you know, and that means that he can get to stuff on the outside pretty easily, too, and drive it. He can drive anything, anywhere, in any quadrant of the zone.
it's just so amazing. He's so strong, and he's not a big guy. Like, if you'd see that he hits balls, you know, he's got an average home run distance of like 428 feet, which leads the majors. So you'd think, yeah, he's probably a bigger dude. I don't know that he weighs 195 pounds.
Yeah, I mean, you see guys like Franmil Reyes. It's no surprise that that guy can hit one 470. But some of the home runs that Acuña hits, just you couldn't barrel it up any better the way that he does. I mean, the swing is so beautiful. Like, and he's, it's not like he's striking out in 3% of his plate appearances. He's still got some deficiencies there. But if he's making contact, man, it's about the prettiest thing in all of baseball.
Beyond a shadow of a doubt.
I mean, all he does is hard contact.
Yeah. It's funny, when I watch him bat, obviously, you know, hitting his dingers is amazing, but it looks to me like what he's doing is he's seeing the ball about a half second before most other major league ball players. I don't know how, I don't know why, I don't know if his eyes are, you know, Superman's eyes or whatever, but it just seems like he's seeing the ball so well. It just allows him to barrel everything that he wants whenever.
And to me, I think the big key with him is his bat head stays in the zone so long. If you watch him swing, he doesn't really swing like any other player. His swing, if you watch it, it almost looks like he's using his arms more. And it's just because the barrel of the bat stays on the same plane for him for so long through the zone that when he makes contact with the ball, he's just got all of that behind it, and his bat head is purely parallel in that zone. It's really fun to watch. I don't know that he could teach that to anybody. I don't know that there's anybody else in baseball that swings quite the same way as Ronald Acuña.
And I don't remember if it was Ozzie or Ender that made this point about him, but he said, you know, whether he bats leadoff, if he bats leadoff, he's going to be the best option at leadoff. If he hits cleanup, he's the best option at cleanup. It, no matter where he hits, like, he's the perfect guy to be hitting anywhere, any of the time. So since he's such a catalyst, and having Dansby and Freddie and Donaldson and just kind of tweaking it to where it works optimally instead of just working on paper, because I mean, you can make a case where Acuña is a perfect cleanup hitter, you know what I mean? But he said all the right stuff about, oh, sure, I'll just do whatever I have to do to help the team. But if you're trying to set the tone at the beginning for an elite offense, especially when you've got some young pitchers that, I mean, Soroka's got confidence for days, Freed's got confidence for days, but no matter how much confidence you've got, if you're up 1-0, 2-3, 4-0 before you even throw a pitch, if you're, you know what I mean? Then like, it just does something to you. It helps you relax and kind of get those jitters out. So the fact that the team has performed so well, I think they're 9-3 since they moved him back to the leadoff spot. I mean, the results are speaking for themselves at this point.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Austin Riley before that. I didn't just gloss over. I just wanted to save it for this next thing. And you talk about the Austin Riley call-up. And what Austin Riley has done since being called up, what he's done this year in general, is completely incredible. He's another one. Everything he seems to hit, he just seems to barrel. He's going to have some swing and miss. That's kind of going to be his thing. But when he makes contact with the ball, he hits the ball. Everything he hits is right on the button. And you've rarely seen him get fooled, which is a huge thing for him. You're talking about a guy that's, what, 22 years old for Austin Riley? And the guy that last year he didn't have the same level of success as Ronald Acuña, which is why, you know, you've got the revisionists talking about why bring in Donaldson when you knew Austin could do this. This Austin Riley that you're seeing this year is not the same Austin Riley that you saw in spring training or the one that you saw last season. This Austin Riley is a guy that's figured things out, and he's comfortable with what he's doing. He is in the zone right now, and he is completely locked in. This is not the same guy you would have gotten had you started him from day one in the majors.
Yeah, this Austin Riley is 28-year-old Austin Riley. He's won a couple of Silver Sluggers. You know, this isn't a rookie that they brought up. They got in a time machine and they went into the future, brought that Austin Riley back, and now he's just mashing bombs. He's confused as to why it's so easy. This isn't a normal human being we're talking about here.
He hit 18 home runs or 19 home runs all last season. He has 20 already between Gwinnett and Atlanta. He has 18 home runs this month. It is the 23rd you guys. Like, this is, like, even Acuna's looking at him going, damn, son, how are you doing that? I mean, like, the power stroke that easy? This is, it's just, and no, it's not sustainable. He's not going to ride, he's not going to wind up hitting 80 home runs this season or anything. But when you look at the upgrade, like, we can say whatever we want about Ender. But, man, like, having Acuna and Riley is infinitely better than having Acuna and Inciarte on any number of fronts. Not to mention, Riley's been grading out positively so far. He's got positive defensive runs saved in left field already for a guy that played 4 games and left in the minors. I mean, the dude is an athlete. So there's going to be a big, big decision to make about what to do with this whole situation, because you can't send Riley down, right? Like, there's not a chance you wind up sending him down.
There is no way in the seven hills that Austin Riley is getting sent down when Ender Inciarte begins his rehab assignment. But I do feel I would be remiss if I did not mention, and I know Doc will call me out on this, I should say that I might have been a bit off on my previous evaluation of Austin Riley. What he's done, and it was a very subtle change, but it's a change that has meant everything. He's lowered his hands. If you put some tape of him side by side from last year to this year and you look at his swing, his hands were a lot higher up, close to his head, right up over his shoulders, but they were higher than they are this year, which meant he had to go down farther to get into his load. So he's going down and moving back. When that was slowing his bat down, that's why he was struggling a little bit to consistently hit guys that were throwing 95 plus, which in today's baseball, if you're not hitting 95, you're not hitting anybody because everybody throws 95. Well, about a week, maybe 2 weeks into the season, all of a sudden his hands are lower, so he's getting into his load quicker. It's not that the swing itself is any faster. He's just cut the time into his load, and you're seeing what a guy who is an absolute monster of a human being. He doesn't have to throw an Acuna-like swing. He doesn't have to swing as hard or as fast as Acuna to send a ball a country mile.
He's got that country strength. You know what I mean? I think it was Jason Woodell who came on and was saying, this looks like a guy who was just kind of born that way. You know what I mean? Like, he never lifted weights a day in his life. He's just born being able to do these type of things. He's got massive hands. He's got hit more balls 105 miles per hour off the bat than Ender has, like, his entire career. That's not a joke. Like, he really has done that already. You know, he's just any the biggest concern on him was the bat speed. So, and you bring up a good point about, like, it's not that he has actually wound up speeding it up. He just got to a more efficient path. You know what I mean? So that's, once again, like I was just saying about the team as a whole, the results bear it out. I mean, everything that we're seeing, like, it's almost hard to believe that this is actually happening. I mean, this is Evan Gattis level of, oh my God, hype, you know, like who the hell is this guy? Like we knew Riley was good, but he wasn't this. Not, we didn't know he could do this. We didn't know he could do this because he wasn't even this until recently.
Boys, he's Clark Kent. I mean, puts on some glasses, walks around Atlanta, and then all of a sudden he takes his glasses off and he puts on the jersey at night, and then he just hits dingers. He's Clark Kent. He's not from Earth. He's from Krypton. I mean,
I'll take it.
It is some sort of run. He's doing Pete Alonso things right now, and if you guys haven't looked at Pete Alonso's numbers, go look at his too. They're absolutely ridiculous. I believe Pete Alonso has 17 homers already as a rookie. So it's good for the Braves to do this 2 years in a row. You've got Ronald Acuna, who came out the gates last year and just put on an absolute laser show. Riley, I do think he's going to slow down. There's just no way to continue this pace. It's just not possible to hit a home run every other day for like every game. So he will slow down at this point. But you start looking at, like, what's a realistic possibility, and he's going to go through some struggles. There will come a point in the next couple of months, once teams have tape on Austin Riley, pitchers are really diligent, and major league pitchers are really good at their job. They'll start to figure out what he does worst, and then he'll have to make an adjustment off of that. Now, assuming he makes that adjustment, he might get to 30 bombs before this year's over.
I don't think it would surprise me. Yeah,
he's a monster.
He's got the barrel chest. He wears like a size 56 coat, you know, like he's a big old boy. And that's the thing. We did know that he was always going to wind up having some power, but the fact that he's actually like getting base hits on top of it too is, this is why you never give up on guys. And the other night when it was Riley Acuña and Soroka, you know, these are all guys that the Marlins were like, hey, we have interest in so-and-so. And the Braves front office was like, yeah, I bet you do. You know, it's good to know that they wound up holding tight on some of these guys. Cause I mean, they were getting, there was some level of gangling these guys.
By the way, not to totally interrupt you, but how stupid does Derek Jeter and the Marlins feel right now, knowing that if they had taken the deal at the deadline last season, they would have gotten Soroka and Riley for JT Realmuto?
You know, sometimes you can really overplay your hand. So,
I mean, that organization's a dumpster fire anyway, so they probably don't know any different.
That's what you call being too greedy.
It's pretty remarkable that the Marlins actually have the longest winning streak in baseball right now. They won six in a row.
Yeah. Not only that, you know what else is remarkable? They're like a game back from the Nationals right now.
Yeah. Clay, you're talking about teams that are a dumpster fire right now? Like,
oh my God, the Nationals are horrific.
That was my pick to win the division. I figured the way out.
Everybody's pick every year to win the division.
They're still so talented. They're so talented. Davey Martinez might be the worst manager of all time. If this, like, I don't know what it is with them, but Davey Martinez is not going to last another month.
Is it Davey Martinez or is it deeper into the organization? I don't know what's going on. I mean, you can't place all of the blame on Martinez. Right?
I don't know, man. They didn't play this badly under Dusty Baker. Dusty Baker's just, you know, he's a guy to get you there and not get you over the hump. I don't know what it is, man, but if/when, because it's going to be when, they fire Davey Martinez, if that team ends up turning it back around, they have so much talent on that roster. And for them to be, what is it, like 18 and 31 or something like that? Some ridiculous number. It's just unacceptable. Now, granted, I'm happy as a Braves fan because it takes out one of the teams that I was really worried about.
The Nats are 19 and 31.
And that's after, I think that's after winning today. I don't know. Bad luck for them is, go ahead.
Maybe they'll hire Mickey Callaway when the Mets fire him.
I like Mickey Callaway, by the way.
Carousel of managers there in the NL East.
I don't know. You might as well move that organization back to Montreal because it is a team that has the players that they do and to be performing that badly. It's good news for the Braves, but for baseball as a whole, it just makes you scratch your head. But again, good news for the Braves, bad news for the Nationals. And we haven't played them yet this year, which seems so crazy to me that we can be 2 months into the season and we haven't played Washington.
They're coming, but yeah, it's really weird. It feels like last year it was the Phillies that we played like 12 times in the first 6 weeks of the season or something like that. And
we
now
play them to like towards the end of the season. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it came back like the next time we saw him, it was when we clinched.
I think it was the most important series. It was the most important series of the year.
That is when you want to be facing them. But yeah, we finally get the Nats next week. I mean, the schedule has been not necessarily brutal, but it hasn't been any great teams outside of the Dodgers. But I mean, when they played Diamondbacks and they played the Cardinals and the Brewers, I was nervous, especially after that Dodger series, but they wound up taking all of those series, you know, and the Giants and game is still going. I think they're going into the 13th now.
13th. Yep.
Yeah. So they are, not a particularly good team. And we get the Cardinals next, which they are, the last I saw, they're in fourth in the NL Central, but that's like basically like being in second in any other division. But then after that, we get the Nationals, we get the Tigers, the Marlins, and then the Pirates. Excuse me, we get the Pirates twice on either side of the Marlins. So we got some division play that's coming up there. We finally get to face the Nationals and kind of see in person what's really going on there. I mean, even if they are struggling, it's sometimes hard to face a division rival. I mean, we did lose once to the Marlins earlier this season. So still, even if they're underperforming, you know, you still got Scherzer to go up against and Patrick Corbin and Anthony Rendon and this whole stable of really talented guys. So,
you know what, whatever you bring on your Scherzer and Strasburg, I don't care. I've got Soroka and Fried. I'm fine.
And this is a two game series, so I don't think that they're pitching back to back, but we'll at least get one of them in there. I'm pretty sure. So I still, can we talk for a second about Mike Soroka? Do we save that for segment two?
Let's save that for segment two. I think that he deserves some real attention and not just like a flyby.
Amazed.
What he's doing is absolutely insane. But you brought up who the Braves have just beaten. And after that Dodgers series, I was really, really worried because the Dodgers are kind of the measuring stick. That's the team that if you have your sights set higher on getting to the playoffs, everything goes through the Dodgers. If you want to get to the World Series, it's through the Dodgers. And the Braves did not look like they even belonged on the same field. So the Diamondbacks, the Brewers, the Cubs, the Cardinals, these are all really talented teams. Now the Cardinals are struggling. A lot of their big-time offensive players are not performing well. Matt Carpenter, Marcelo Zuna, a few guys on their offense who really are underperforming. But how the Braves were going to handle those teams, I was worried that the Braves were going to go on a big losing streak there. And the way they played Milwaukee, I think was to me, I think that was the biggest series of the year. Milwaukee is an incredible team. The only hole they have is what the Braves exploited. That's their starting pitching. Their starting pitching is pretty abysmal, but their offense is incredible. Their bullpen is incredible. Josh Hader might be one of the best pitchers in the league, period, starter or reliever. And Freddie Freeman tanked on them. And it was to take that series from the Brewers was absolutely huge. I think that's done a wonder for the Braves' confidence. Now, I need you to go ahead and beat the Giants today. Don't split a series with one of the worst teams in baseball. Just go ahead and put them away.
These are the games that you're supposed to win, you know, 5-1 against the Marlins and you have to win those games, and 2-1 in the series against the Giants, not bad. And if they're able to take the game against Mad Bum, I mean, truthfully, they were one strike away from being up 3-0 in the series and having it not be nearly as big of a must win game as it is. But yeah, these are important because you know you're going to wind up dropping some to the Dodgers. You're going to drop at least one to Milwaukee. And any of those three series we were talking about, you know you're going to wind up dropping at least one, maybe more, against some of these really good teams. And that's okay. I mean, in baseball, you can – even if you win 100, you still lose 62. So you're just going to lose some in the course of being. But yeah, we're in the 13th inning right now, and I'm starting to wonder who's going to wind up coming in to pitch this game. So I hope that that somebody's going to wind up coming in and pitching multiple innings because it's
Charlie Culberson, boys.
It's time.
He's coming in
and bring him back out. You know, he got his first strikeout the last time he pitched. So yeah, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if we wind up seeing him here. So, but yeah, all things considered, I feel so much better about the team this month. As opposed to last month, they proven that they can hang with some of the good teams. They've proven that they're capable of beating some of the not so good teams, and not just, you know, like last year in June, we lost a series to the Orioles. Like, are you kidding me right now? So yeah, I don't know about you guys, Clay. Temperature check for you. How are you feeling about the team overall right now?
I feel really good. It to me, they look like they're doing what they need to do against, like you said, the weaker teams. But I mean, even if they don't quite take this game today, it is against Madison Bumgarner. That's their best pitcher out there. It's not the worst thing in the world. It seems like there's a very definitive line there that, you know, they're starting pitching, you know, 5 or 6 innings, you know, they're getting tired. You know, they're hitting well against bad pitchers. They're hitting okay against okay pitchers. They're doing all the necessary things to succeed. You know, and you're not going to win every game, like you said. You're not going to win 162. That just doesn't happen. But if you can take, you know, 2 games out of every 3-game series, 3 games out of every 4, if you can split a couple, hey, you're still going to the postseason. I mean,
that's the name of the game. Win as many series as possible. Nobody goes into it thinking they can sweep every series unless you happen to be the Astros, who I don't know if they're ever going to make an out again, much less lose a game. But when you're talking about the Braves, that offense, it's kind of weird how quickly it's gotten to it, but the offense is what drives the machine. It makes me happy. In this climate of baseball, I do think offense is what drives the meter. When you look at the teams that are in the postseason the last 3-4 years, the guys that go to the World Series and go deep in the playoffs, they're all really, really great offenses. Now the Braves, with the addition of Austin Riley, with the most underrated player maybe in all of baseball in Freddie Freeman, Ronald Acuna, of course, Josh Donaldson, you've got one of the deeper lineups in the division. You're still not the Dodgers, who have like 20 homer guys that just come off the bench, but the Braves bench is substantially deeper when you consider that Johan Camargo can come off the bench, or if he's being used correctly as a super utility piece. Matt Joyce is actually a decent bench option. We know what Charlie can do off the bench. It's a far better bench than it was last year, just by the simple fact that Ryan Flaherty is nowhere near this team anymore. Nick Markakis has had a really good season. He's slowed down lately, but he finally got his first off day today. And I think that's going to be the key thing here. It's time to start getting some of these guys some days off, and the Braves have the ability to do that.
I hate to jump in here, but Austin Riley just hit an RBI double to right field, RBI single to right field, and the Braves are up 5-4 now.
Love him.
Seems about right for the 2 weeks that Austin Riley's had. This seems about right for him.
So how do you like that? We've been coveting the relievers in the Giants bullpen. So there we go. Who needs a bullpen? We need a bullpen so bad.
That is very true. When we come back, we have to take our first break of the show. When we come back, we're going to talk about the dominance that has been Mike Soroka. Don't worry, you guys. Y'all are crazy if you thought I wasn't going to talk about Max Fried. We'll cover that as well. Along with some of our other favorite guys, or some guys to take some notice of in the minor leagues, some other guys who aren't Austin Riley, but deserve some props all on their own. When we come back, we'll talk about all those things right here on the Platinum Sombrero.
This week's episode of the Platinum Sombrero podcast is brought to you by Amsterdam, presented by the Worldwide Tourism Federation. Have you already booked your trip to Holland? Well, if so, be sure to download Amsterdam, the hot new globe-trotting companion app that's got everybody buzzing. Whether you're planning on getting cross-eyed in Culemborg or wrecked in Utrecht, with Amsterdam, you can plan and track an entire slate of activities for those Rotterdam days and Harlem nights, because your trip to the Netherlands should be impossible to forget, and even harder to remember. Don't let your memories go up in smoke. Download Amsterdam today. Presented in conjunction with Dank of America and the Contravan, delivering chronic debauchery since 2001. Patent pending. Almost got drunk at school at 14, where I almost made out with the homecoming queen, who almost went on to be Miss Texas, but lost to a slut with much bigger breasts. I almost dropped out to move to LA, where I was almost famous for almost a day. And I
welcome back, everybody, to the Platinum Sombrero, brought to you by our friends at MyBookie.ag. MyBookie.ag is the number one place to go for any and all online gambling. If you like to have a little bit of fun with your games, if you like to bet the money lines, if you like to bet the props, MyBookie.ag has it all. Whether it's if Ronald Acuna is going to hit a home run in the game, whether Austin Riley is going to hit another home run in a game, it's a pretty good bet to make right there. If you like betting the Stanley Cup playoffs, NHL never seems to end. They always seem to be in playoff mode, so pretty good place to go would be mybookie.ag. If you like to bet on boxing, mixed martial arts, MyBookie has everything. And if you're ever concerned, if you ever don't understand a line, if you're new to the experience, wanting to learn a little bit more, mybookie.ag's customer service is second to none. Very helpful, very quick. Just an all-around fantastic company to use. And as a bonus, just because they're our friends, if you use our promo code BRAVES25, they will give you up to 50% match on your initial deposit. So if you sign up and put in $100 of playing money, they will give you $50 just for using that promo code and make it a whole lot more fun. MyBookie.com, play MyBookie.ag, play, win, and have a great time. So before the break, I did mention who all we're going to talk about. I'm just going to jump straight into this, guys. Mike Soroka might be the most outstanding 21-year-old pitcher I've ever seen in my life.
I don't even know if there's a mite about it. I've never seen it, anything like what he's doing. And I don't, you never want to give too lofty of comps. You know what I mean? Because if people don't live up to it, then it's, you know, you wind up looking like a moron. But
and shots fired. Thank you, Doc.
What's that?
Said, shots fired. Just say my name next time.
Hey, dude, look, I do the same thing. I refrain from making comps because, one, I don't feel like I have the knowledge base requisite for doing such a thing. But also because I don't want somebody to dig up an old take and say, oh, you said that, you know, Ender and Ciarte was going to hit like whatever. But, dude, I can't help it. Every time I see Mike Soroka, I'm like, this is like watching Greg Maddux. It is. And I feel ridiculous for saying that. Greg Maddux is a Hall of Famer who had sub-2 ERAs in multiple seasons, like one of the best control artists that ever pitched. And every time I see Soroka, I'm just like, what is this? This isn't. You never see anything like that anymore. Like, Clay, am I crazy? Like, this is not unprecedented, but this is, we haven't seen a pitching prospect like this in a long time.
I mean, guys, I think we need to calm down just a little bit. I mean, his ERA did get over 1 the other day, so, I mean, really, how good is this guy?
I mean,
come on. No, I love Mike Soroka. I've loved him the whole time he's been in the system. I got to see him as his opening day start before he got called up last year at Gwinnett. He was dominant there. It was amazing. When he got hurt, I cried a little bit. Part of my soul died last year. But he's been and Austin Riley, to me, they show such what's the word I'm looking for here? Wow,
camaraderie.
I'm blanking right now. Not a camaraderie, but like they're so advanced in their thought process and the way they look at the game of baseball and the way they play the game of baseball. It's they aren't 21 and 22 year olds in my eyes. Like they play so advanced. It's amazing. It's amazing to see him deal on the mound. Austin Riley, the way he sees the ball, the way Soroka's throwing the ball. It's incredible. I wish I was that mature. Mature, that's the word I was looking for. Wow. I wish I was that mature at 21, 22 years old because I made a lot of really dumb mistakes. But it's been an absolute pleasure to have these guys on this team.
Mike Soroka is the one comp that I still feel really, really good about. I comped him to Adam Wainwright, and I still feel fantastic about that comparison. Not Adam Wainwright today, but Adam Wainwright when he was first coming up is a guy who just everything seems so easy for him. You don't see him stress. You don't see him ever upset on the mound or sweating on the mound. It just seems to flow so easy. His motion, his mechanics, everything is free and easy. Before you know it, he's pumping a 95 sinker past you. Every pitch he has moves. He doesn't throw anything straight. Very rarely does he throw anything down the middle quadrant of the plate. Almost all the time, it's on one corner or the other. And it's really fun to watch him. It's not, this might sound bad to some people, but it's not the same to me as watching Max Fried, where when I watch Max Fried throw a curveball, like, I giggle like a little girl, and I have to look around and see if anybody heard me do it. Because it's like, it's involuntary. Like, I can't help myself. I don't get that same elation when Soroka throws. Like, I don't think Soroka has any pitch that's the same as Max Fried's curveball. His slider has some ridiculous spin rate on it, though, I will say that. But it's just everything he does, it's the most solid, consistent thing I've ever seen. And it's impossible to just look at him and think this is a 21-year-old. This is a guy that pitches like he's 31, 32, and that he's been in the league for 10 years. He just knows exactly who he is, and he knows that if he does his job, you can't do yours.
It's so much of the time when you see guys that know how to pitch and sequence and locate and do all of those things, they're doing it because they don't have the velocity to blow guys away. But what makes him so special is that he's like, he can do all these things. He's painting with 97. Like, all of his pitches break in the exact right spot every single time. His mechanics are precise every single time. Like, I kind of can't believe what we're seeing here. And like we talked about Riley in segment number one, what he's doing is not sustainable. I don't think that he's going to have an entire season where his ERA stays hovering around 1 and his FIPs under 2, and he's not really getting the home run that he gave up to the belt. No, it was Crawford to break up the perfect game the other night. was the first one that he'd given up in 61 something innings. I mean, this is unreal. And it would be hard for him to win Rookie of the Year at this point, because you talked about Pete Alonso in segment one, but my God, like, we wanted an ace. There was talk about, you know, let's go get Kluber, let's go get Bauer. And a couple of months ago, we were wondering about Soroka's shoulder at all. And now this is the ace we've been looking for. And even like you have been had banging the drum for Fried for a long time, and me too, to somewhat of a lesser degree, when Max Fried's not even the best pitcher on your staff. What is going on?
By the way, I should actually mention right now, congratulations to Mac Williamson for joining the Platinum Sombrero Club, as the Braves have just beaten the San Francisco Giants 5-4. And Mac Williamson, your packet, your membership package will be coming in the mail 8 to 10 business days. We welcome you to the club, sir.
Congratulations, Mac. You're welcome on the show anytime.
Sorry to derail there. Sorry to derail there, but you just brought up Max Fried, and
that's totally worth it.
While you're right, I kind of want to fight you a little bit.
And understood. And we can, you know, everybody's got their love affair. You know what I mean? Like Soroka, I remember when Soroka got drafted, and just everybody was like, oh, this is a reach. Nobody's ever heard of this guy. Should have drafted so and so. You know, so many woulda, shoulda, coulda. Missed opportunity thing. And then with the next pick, they picked Austin Riley, and they're like, this, why are they drafting this guy as a third baseman? You know, all the other teams want this guy as a pitcher. The Braves don't even know what they're doing. And as it turns out, the Braves front office, once again, knew more than just a whole bunch of casual fans on Twitter.
Brian Bridges might be the best talent evaluator ever.
Unbelievable what he was able to pick out of that. But now you see why all these decisions got made. And this is why you say you can't judge something right after it happens. You have to give it some time. So, Clay, I'm going to kick this over to you. It's Game 7 of the World Series, and Fried and Soroka are on regular rest. Who do you start?
Ooh, that's tough. See, the difference for me in Fried and Soroka, Fried, you're dealing with an artist. Soroka, you're dealing with a surgeon. They're both great at doing what they do. It's just the way they go about doing it is completely different, but they're both amazing. I mean, obviously, the lineup, I'd have to take the lineup into effect, you know, the lefty-righty splits and whatnot. But, I mean, if that's not a huge factor, I'm going Soroka all day long.
That's why I'm crushing you. That is why Cy Whistler is crushing the Watauga County dinguses.
Dude, what? Wait, I didn't hear what you said.
That is why my fantasy team is crushing Clay's, folks, right there.
Oh, all right. Okay. we're going there. We're going there.
No, but seriously, though.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you have no control over drafting a team and you just have to watch Josh draft for you.
That sounds like an excuse.
Watching a five-year-old, like, with just a handful of markers just in a pure white wall, just coloring the whole wall, and then you're just like, I know to not do that, but I guess I just got to let you do your thing.
But I am playing that up a little bit. I totally understand. What Mike Soroka does, and I don't want to say this out loud, but I guess I have to. I would probably take Soroka too, dang it.
Ooh.
But
oh my God. Really?
It's for one reason.
Your boy.
For one reason. I don't think when you're talking about Fried, there's a bigger component that comes to Fried, and it has to be the correct game plan with him. So the catcher makes a big deal. Now, you guys know that I've obviously hated on Tyler Flowers catching Max Fried. Tyler Flowers did call a fantastic game for Max Fried last week against the Brewers. It was a fantastic game call. Very few times did Tyler Flowers call a fastball three times in a row. He actually varied the pitches, and he let Fried like work a curveball early in the count, which has always been important. But Soroka doesn't have any discernible splits between either catcher. And that's just because all of Soroka's pitches move to where it doesn't really matter which pitch they're calling. Nothing is really having any chance of being left anywhere in the danger zone. Occasionally he'll leave a changeup to where it can get hit and get hit hard. But the hitters are so off balance because everything else has been pinpoint that they'll end up missing the meatball pitch. You talked about the one home run in over 60 innings. that's the thing. When you're talking about playoff baseball, if you're talking about who I would rather have facing the Dodgers lineup, it's probably Soroka, because the pitches he throws, while they don't have the same amount of movement as Fried's, the movement they have is more, what's the right way to put this? The movement they have is more geared towards ground balls. It's yes, a little bit more calculated, and it's a little bit more efficient at getting ground balls. Max does a great job getting ground balls. And if you're asking me my favorite pitcher on the Braves, it's Max Fried. But I do have to be honest. What Soroka does is more geared towards the ground ball. Soroka gets strikeouts just like Fried gets strikeouts. Fried is more of a power pitcher than Mike Soroka will ever be. But Mike Soroka, everything he throws is 3, 4, 5 pitches in farther along in his head. That when you talked about him and Greg Maddux, that's that kind of thought process right there, where Soroka thinks of things, you know, 2 innings down the road, 3 innings down the road. What's the best possible outcome? And he thinks of, like, what's the worst case scenario with this pitch. So that's why I'd probably take Soroka in that situation.
It's a great conversation to be able to have. You know, there were so many questions.
Still love you, Max. Still love you, Max.
I mean, it's like I said, if Fried is the second best starter on your team, this is good. This is a really good thing. There were so many questions about who's going to step up in the rotation, who's going to do what. And the answers have been two guys that everybody were just kind of hoping for, you know, but there were huge questions about Folty. There still kind of are, but we're going to get to that in a second. Julio, over the last 4 starts, has been tremendous, just absolutely tremendous. He's had sub-1 ERA over his last 4 starts. I mean, the FIP isn't really bearing it out as much, but that's if we're looking at reflective, not predictive, that he's done fantastic job. Over the last 30 days, the Braves have not counting today, have been 11-6 with a 2.96 ERA, 3.62 FIP, walking 3 per 9 and striking out just about a batter per inning. So, I mean, that's pretty good. And based on where things were with coming into the season, like, I feel really good. I mean, Soroka, Fried, obviously. Julio has looked different. He seems to have a spring in his step. Even if the velo kind of comes and goes, he has looked a lot better. He does kind of have that Julio swagger. Gausman and Julio are very similar. But Gausman, I still don't know what to make of him. But I think because Soroka and Fried and Teran have been doing what they've been doing, then having Gausman as a 4 and possibly a 5 if Folty can build off what he was doing, this is a rotation you can actually feel pretty good about. The bullpen, still, we're going to get on that too. But Folty is the wild card here. You know, because he was okay in that first start with Colorado when he came back, and then against the Padres, and then against the Cardinals, especially. Thank God I did not have to watch that one. That was a bad one. And he grew up a Cardinals fan. I wonder if that gets inside his head at all, is that he was facing his childhood team, and they just kind of started to beat up on him, and everything kind of started to compound. But this past start against the Brewers, he gave up a home run to Christian Yelich. I mean, you can forgive that. So if he winds up being a 5, then, and Gausman's your 4, you still feel good about it. But if he can start taking these steps to where he's a 3 again, or he's a 2 again, and then you're pushing either Max or Soroka, then if that's your top 3, that's a dangerous team. With this offense, with those as your top 3, even with the bullpen having hiccups, I mean, that's a stout team right there.
That's a good series right there.
Pretty much.
Yeah. I like that you brought up Julio. What you're starting to see with Julio a lot, that slider is starting to bite again. And a lot of people were quick to start yelling about Rick Kranitz and wanting to pull the plug on him. That's a Rick Kranitz staple. If you look at what Aaron Nola was doing a year ago, one of the reasons why he had such a good year and why it was something that, you know, why all of his peripherals backed it up, it was the sharp bite on his breaking ball, on his curveball. It was the ability to use them in different counts and to not have a pitch that's a predictable pitch. Like, when you have a problem that you have to go to this pitch, that's one of the things that hitters look for. That's why a 3-1 count is the best count in all of baseball. or a 2-0 count, what do hitters do? They know they're getting a fastball. Why? Because for the most part, pitchers can become predictable. Baseball players like their rhythms. They like their structures. So they like to get ahead early and then play with their off-speed pitches. What I think he's trying to do with these guys, what I hope he's trying to do, what he did with Aaron Nola, was get them to the point that they can use any pitch in any count. And it just gives the batter 2-3 more things that they have to think about, and it disrupts timing. To see Julio having that slider working most of the time this season, it's a really big thing for him, because the velocity, he's not going to put people away velocity-wise anymore, and hitters do not chase the ball off the plate the same way they did 3 years ago, which was where Julio made a lot of his living then. He has to be more around the zone now, so having a slider that's got that type of bite, if he can carry that over, and I don't think he's going to keep up with an ERA under 1. I don't think that's going to happen. He's actually hasn't given up a whole lot of home runs this year, at least as far as Julio goes. So at some point, there's probably some regression coming. But I love what I've seen out of him so far, and I think a lot of people owe Rick Kranitz an apology.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Kranitz has definitely done a lot, you know, to help Julio, and I think he's on the brink of helping Folty get back to, you know, 2018 form. And I think what you're seeing in Folty right now, in my opinion, is, you know, last year you saw Julio, you know, he's struggling with two things, or actually three things. He's struggling with his mental state. He's struggling with his fastball velo, and he's struggling with his slider. And I feel like the same thing's happening to Folty now. I don't know whether it was because of all the, you know, injury stuff earlier in the season or what, but he just, I feel like he can't depend on those two pitches, which are his staples. So if he can't, you know, and we all know how much of a head case Folty is, and if he can't go to his two favorite pitches, then, you know, he starts getting angry and throwing temper tantrums and giving up home runs and, you know, things like that.
And he's such a crucial part, you know, because we saw last year, he's a really good example of why you don't give up on a prospect, because everybody wanted to put him in the bullpen and, or, you know, just trade him, see if you can get some type of value for him. And then it clicked last year. And he was the only one who liked having Chuck Hernandez as a pitching coach. But yeah, he's such a crucial aspect of this team. And when we were doing our prep before the show, this is something you brought up, Dylan, you know, like you feel a lot better about having Soroka, very mentally stable Mike Soroka, as your number one, and shortly behind him Max Fried as your number two, as opposed to having Folty as your number one, because as soon as things start going sideways, like when five rolls over to one during the season from the rotation, then you almost don't even notice. But in the playoffs, it's really important. So when you're Mike Foldynewicz and you give up a home run to Jock Peterson literally on the first pitch that you throw to the Dodgers, I mean, things that can cause you to spin and can cause your team to spin, because you're already, like, with such a young team, you're basically walking the tightrope to begin with. So his development, if he can work with Rick Kranitz, and he doesn't have to come back all at once, I mean, it's still going to be kind of gradual. He's got his spring training behind him, and it sucks that he was doing it in Atlanta and not in Gwinnett, but Even with him struggling, like I still feel really good about what he's going to be able to do. And the numbers that I was kind of spouting off earlier with the 11-6 and with the 2.96 ERA and 3.62 FIP, that includes a number of starts from Folty just kind of coming out and stinking it up. So it says a lot about the rest of the rotation that those numbers are where they are with him struggling the way that he has been. So, but if the starters are pitching well, and then the bullpen does some of the things that they have been doing recently, that thing is still keeps happening, and they still keep making moves. And I like the way Newcomb looks out there, even though he gave up the home run today. Tukey looked fantastic and got a new acquisition this week, which I think that we should probably touch on. Dylan, tell me what you think about new Braves reliever Anthony Swarzak.
All right, so there's two separate thoughts that I have on Swarzak. One, Swarzak the player taking away everything about the deal and about the situation, just Anthony Swarzak the player. Not good. He's had two really good seasons in New York. In 2017, he posted a 2.2 F4. He was one of the better relievers in all of baseball. One of his seasons with the Twins, he posted a full 1.0 WAR, which is a really good season for a reliever. He has more negative value seasons than positive. He gives up a ton of home runs. He gets a lot of strikeouts, but he's a slider guy. And Doc, you know, I don't like slider reliant pitchers, because the slider happens to be a pitch that if you make a mistake with a slider, that ball goes a very, very long way. As far as what has he been lately, dude had an 807 FIP with the Mariners, and that is a very, very bad defensive team. With that team, his FIP was an 807. So
the game logs were really interesting for him, because he had like 7 or 8 straight games where he was lights out, and then he gave up one or more, and often cases it was or more, runs in like 7 or 8 straight appearances. And with his appearance last night with the Braves, he's now had 3 straight scoreless. So I don't know if he was working through some type of injury or what, but all of that, like during that 7 or 8 game span where he was just sucking royally, his FIP was like 17. So all things considered, that 8, that don't look so bad now, does it?
It's like Juan Nicasio. It's like Juan Nicasio. Juan Nicasio did the same thing for them last year. He got a ton of holds. He had an ERA of like 6 because he would go through spurts where everything he threw would get touched up from massive dingers. That's kind of the way Swarzak is. If you're asking me, do I think he's going to be some lockdown solution to this pen? No. My thoughts on the actual acquisition, they don't bother me. It's worth a shot. You weren't using Biddle. You'd already released him. You were probably about to DFA him again. Vizzy's not playing anymore. You can't trust Vizzy to throw like a potato chip without breaking his shoulder. So, I mean, you got something for two players that were not part of your team. Now, whether you really got something or, you know, You basically, it's a blindfolded dart throw. It's not even like a real dart throw. It's like somebody dared you in the bar to like close your eyes and throw it, and you're just drunk enough to think that that's a good idea. So there's a potential for this to be really good. Maybe a miracle happens. Maybe he captures that form he had in New York. Maybe coming back to the NL does that. I don't think that I would expect that. I don't think any rational fan should, because for the most part in his career, he has a really good season followed by a few seasons of really, really bad play. Does it bother? I think it's a worthwhile gamble. I mean, it's not like he can be much worse than what you had with Biddle and Viz. And if he doesn't work out, you can release him. I mean, it's not a big deal. The money ended up being pretty much even. They threw in some money, so it ended up being like a zero net right there. So why not take a shot? Let me clarify. If that is where it ends, like if Swarzak is the big idea that now our bullpen is fixed, then I'm going to have some major problems. If this is just a, hey, let me throw a Band-Aid at this until we get closer to the deadline, then I'm fine with it.
I think that's probably a little more what it is. It's like, it reminds me of the Blevins move a little bit, where it's like, look, we need to make a change, and this is what's available to us right now. But yeah, I don't think this is the end all be all, and I think that Anthopoulos would tell you that he's still looking around. But what about you, Clay Beck? What do you think about this Anthony Swarzak nonsense?
I'm with you guys. You know, it's just there's holes in the dam right now, and we're patching them with Band-Aids. And if the Band-Aid holds, awesome. If it doesn't, we just get another Band-Aid. I think AA's got an overall plan for the most part. You know, as much of a plan as you can have in baseball. But, you know, look at Anibal Sanchez. Was it last year, Anibal Sanchez? I mean, you know, picked him up, you know, going into spring training. He ended up, you know, starting in the postseason for us. You know, and I know that, you know, that's comparing apples to oranges and so on and so forth. But it never hurts to take a flyer on some of these older guys just to see if you can capture lightning in a bottle for another half year, three quarters of a year. Hell, if he goes out and pitches, you know, another 30 innings and puts up a 3 ERA, I'm pretty sure most of us would be, well, some of us would be happy. But, you know, I'm good with it. We'll see what happens. And worst case scenario, we got a whole crap load of people in the farm system to come up, and we'll give them a shot.
I think my one thing on this bullpen take, I'm seeing a lot of people who are acting as if like this whole bullpen situation and using the fact that a lot of the free agent relievers have not been strong to this point in the year, and using this as some sort of springboard that Alex knew exactly what he was doing at the beginning of the season. Doc, if I were to tell you that a team one game out of first place has switched over 80% of their opening day bullpen, would you assume that that is a team that is in second place, or would you assume that something horrible has happened?
I would lean a little more towards something borderline catastrophic has happened. Maybe there was some type of inkling, you know, maybe they've got some models and they ran it and say, well, I mean, look, it doesn't make sense to sign this guy, but we don't know that for sure. But it does certainly look interesting that of all of the different options that so many of them are gone.
Two relievers that were in the opening day bullpen remain.
Yeah. And some of it, you know, the Biddle was good last year. Samotka was good last year. And I think that Biddle was on his way towards a Phantom IL stint until he got hit in the nuts with a comebacker. And then I think his IL stint was legit. And I think that Sabatka actually hurt himself too. And he's starting his rehab stint tonight. But even of those two guys, one was the laughingstock of the team last year. Like he was my perpetual punchline. I'm sorry, Luke Jackson. I am for real. And then it was Josh Tomlin who got picked up off the scrap heap, and the luster is kind of wearing off him a little bit. So, I will say that, you know, there is continual tweaking. I think there's more to come. I think that they're getting there. I think that Newcomb and Tukey spend the rest of the year out in the pen. I think Dayton will be back up soon. Jackson, he's really done well for himself. I had no idea until I read that article that friend of the program, Eno Saris, put out that Jackson apparently went to Driveline this year or this offseason. So that might be part of the reason why he's done really well. Jacob Webb, still love that guy. So I think that they're getting there with some of these guys. And Swarzak, like I said, it reminds me of the Blevins move and said, this is a Band-Aid that we're going to put on the dam. Maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. But you can fault them for not doing stuff in the offseason. I think that everybody's well within their rights to do so. But you can't fault them for not doing things during the season because there has been constant turnover out there. I think that Swarzak was the 19th different reliever that they've used this year. 19 different relievers. It is May the 23rd.
Yeah, dude, that's another number that if you think that this was a master plan, I think you're kind of dumb. I think that the Braves have gotten incredibly lucky with how it has turned out, and that's okay. All that being said, I'm happy the Braves have gotten lucky. They have looked a lot better lately. So hopefully things are starting to stabilize because the bullpen doesn't have to be amazing for the Braves to do what they're looking to do, at least in the division. But if you start thinking about, you know, setting your sights a little bit higher than just winning the division, then that bullpen is a much larger deal. Doc and I, I'm sure we're going to get to that a little bit. We'll get to that in future shows. I have a feeling that the bullpen is going to be the topic of conversation for this team for most of the year. But that said, we are rapidly running out of time, and we do want to do an extra inning segment selfishly because Doc and I are both wanting to hear a story so badly that we decided to take about 10 minutes out of the program just to dedicate towards Clay Beck running the extra innings gauntlet.
I don't know. Do we have enough time to do like a couple of questions, or do we just get right to the meat of this?
Let's throw out three questions.
Okay. All right. First things first. Number one, Clay Beck, you have an unconventional and unnecessary superpower. What is it?
Conventional and unnecessary. I think I was having a conversation about this the other day with someone. I can't remember who it was, but what I ended up coming up with was kind of a weird one, but it fits me. I would love to give perfect advice all the time.
That's a good one. That's pretty useful, actually.
I mean, yeah, I guess it wouldn't be considered unnecessary, but that was my weird superpower. Like, if somebody's having a really bad time or day or something like that, I could just tell them something, and it would make it better. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't feel like I've ever given good advice good advice in my entire life.
I try to give good advice because I've been through some stuff, but there's some situations where I'm just like, I don't know. But I would love to just be able to give like perfect advice all the time, forever. That'd be pretty cool.
No, that's good. I think that's a good one. What about you, Dylan? I don't know if we've had this question before.
I don't know. I think if we're talking unnecessary and unconventional, the ability to make any dog poop just by staring into his eyes.
Oh, man.
No more.
I had an apartment with my ex-wife, and I would have paid you any amount of money to be able to do that, to take her dog out and just stare at it and make it poop, because there's no telling how many hours that I've wasted.
No more 20-minute more 20 minutes standing outside at like 11:30 at night.
Oh, God.
Man, when we bought this house, it didn't have a fence. We paid a pretty penny to get the fence around our backyard because enough time on the leash with these guys. Like, because I don't have that superpower, we built the fence. We just let them out. We'll make them stare at each other. Now, that is a time saver. Mine, my superpower is that I can go to the grocery store and not get home and say, damn, I forgot whatever. Because I'm going to live the rest of my life. I'm going to live the rest of my life always needing something from the store. Like, we will do our weekly trip, right? And then, like, two or three times during the week, we'll swing by because we forgot Ziploc bags or because we forgot honey or something. There's literally always something. So I'm like, I don't know if my superhero has a name, but that's what I would do. So.
And it's usually the thing you need the most earlier in the week. You're just like, oh, man. I need to put that one on the list first. And then you go, and then you get literally everything else you plan to get except for that one thing. That happens to me all the time.
How did I forget that one thing? That is the reason why I'm here. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, we've got a list that we keep on the fridge, like, specifically for the midweek trips, and no matter what, and always, I'll remember that. I'm not going to forget trash bags. Always forget trash bags. But, all right, so in the interest of time, I'm going to dive right into the second one. Now, Dylan, we kind of had an episode about this back in the offseason when we were clutching at straws for topics and we wound up going over your emo playlist. By the way, this coming offseason, I'm going to make you listen to a ton of Phish. Clay, when you were 16, what are three albums that would have been in your CD player?
CD player.
Wait, how old are you? Would you have had an MP3 player? I'm old as hell.
So, well, the thing is I drove a truck in high school that didn't have a CD player. It had a cassette player.
Go
to Walmart and buy a cassette adapter. So it was like a little cassette tape that you stuck in there, and it had a auxiliary cord coming out of it. And then I plugged it into my iPod, and then that's what I listened to music on. But what I was really into in high school, let's see. I think 16, 17-ish, I got really into, like, bluegrass music. I started listening to the Steel Drivers, so probably their first album. So the Steel Drivers, their lead singer was Chris Stapleton. This was way before all the Chris Stapleton blow-up Tennessee Whiskey stuff happened.
Yeah, okay, so, okay.
Yeah, that, and then obviously everybody of our age group, Dylan, Doc, I don't know about whatever. listen to classic rock. You know, I was really big into the Eagles. They were my first. It's funny that same truck that I drove in high school was where I remember listening to my first song that I ever remember, and it was Get Over It by the Eagles. So I've always been a huge Eagles fan, so probably Hell Freezes Over is a big one for me. And then in the interim between like early high school and like later high school, I got really into the Black Crowes. Still really love the Black Crowes.
Yeah.
Crowes.
Shake Your Moneymaker was a really big one. I had that on repeat for a long time. So probably those three. Hell Freezes Over, Shake Your Moneymaker, and then the Steel Drivers.
That's a good combo. I love some Black Crowes. Well, Dylan, we took a pretty wide range. And I'm not sure of when we went through your playlist. So what were your your top three for 16-year-old Dylan?
All right, for 16-year-old Dylan, Master of Puppets from Metallica.
Yeah.
There's so many. There's so many that were bands that I probably wouldn't listen to now. I mean, if we're just talking about 16-year-old Dylan, definitely Too Fast for Love from Motley Crue would have been on there. The third one's probably is a little bit difficult. There's so many. I wasn't big on listening to full CDs. Probably Breaking Benjamin, The Diary of Jane, so Phobia, yeah, I believe, is that album.
I was about to say, yeah, that was a good one.
Those would probably be the three. I listened to those a lot in high school.
No, those are
a lot of. Yeah, go ahead, Doc.
Okay, go ahead.
I mean, I also listened to a lot of CCR. I was a huge CCR fan, like early in high school. I don't know why. I mean, I like CCR, but I just for some reason got super into Creedence. I'm trying to think what else. Just I never really listened to a whole bunch of pop stuff. Or I mean, I don't know. I got a little bit into My Chemical Romance for a little while. And then, like, middle school me was, like, super about All-American Rejects, which is really embarrassing.
Don't feel bad. I listened to them, too. Swing Swing was one of my favorite songs throughout, like, my entire high school life.
No, I remember All-American Rejects. You know, I was in my mid-20s when the time that came out. You had Master of Puppets on CD. No lie, bought it on cassette, 1991. Not nice. Even joking. Nine years old.
First time I heard it was my dad's original cassette.
I mean, that's something you pass down from generation to generation.
He didn't pass it down. I stole it. He didn't pass it down. I stole it from his dresser.
It's not like Damage Incorporated is the type of thing that translates really well to like a lullaby.
Disposable Heroes, you know, Leper Messiah.
Yeah. Like, Daddy, what's a Leper Messiah? I don't really think we have time to get into it now.
Listen, I'll tell you when you're older.
But I think for me, like, we used to have Whatever by Our Lady Peace, which was recorded right around the time that they had this album called Clumsy, which was their second album. Man, I wore that CD out. That was the one that had Superman's Dead, and which was really big. And I think you guys would have been like 6, 7 years old when that song came out.
Yeah, I'll pretend like I know what that is.
Yeah, they were like arena rock level in Canada, but they really weren't all that here. But I still love them. I think I would have had Black Crowes as well. They had like a greatest hits album that came out, so it had like all the popular stuff from like Shake Your Money Maker, but also Southern Harmony and Musical Companion. Songs like Sometimes Salvation, which to this day, that song still just like the mention of it, I've got chills on one of my arms. It's probably weird I didn't get it on the other one. And then right around the same time, you could not convince me when I was 16, 17, that 311 was not the most amazing band that existed. Oh my God. And every guitar solo I have ever played has been a direct attempt to try and recreate the solo from Stealing Happy Hours at the last song on Transistor. It is the most chill, awesome, like the chords are, it's like the Tim Mahoney was channeling Jerry Garcia with it. It's got like that super chill, but kind of, it's just the best. Love it. Can't listen to them now because they are terrible. But back then, man, they were wonderful. But okay. So nice. This is the reason why we wanted to make sure we had to do a segment of extra innings. I wish we had a little bit more time for this. But Clay, you have a very special story that you would like to tell. And normally when we have our guests on, we make them tell an embarrassing childhood story. But I think this is geared a little more towards adolescence. So
yeah, so we'll call it adolescence.
By the way, if you have younger children in the car and you don't want them to hear this part, this would be a good time to end this episode.
I'm not gonna get graphic with it. So this I'm sharing it with you guys because I love you and all the people that listen to the Platinum Sombrero because it's too good of a story not to share. But this is the story of how I lost my virginity. So I was dating this girl for about 2 months, and then we broke up for 2 months, and then we got back together for 2 months. I was 19. I had just graduated high school, so super awesome ladies' man. She wanted me to come hang out with her at her brother's place in Athens. So I was on my way out. I lived in northern Georgia. So I was headed out to Athens, stopped at a super sketchy gas station, and bought condoms for the first time ever. It was really weird. It was just me and this Indian guy in this like dimly lit gas station off the side of the road.
Judgmental
had
stare.
Had no idea what I was doing. Got him, headed out that way. So it was a townhome in Athens. So like where the house was, where he parked, he had to like pull off the side of the road. So I pulled off the side of the road in the grass and got stuck. She had to, because I'm a redneck and we all drove trucks in high school and beyond. So she had to pull me out, but she had to pull me out of the ditch. Yeah, still talking about the truck. She had to pull me out. I was kind of embarrassed of that. So I got to a better place where I wouldn't get stuck and so on and so forth. Went inside. Like I said, we were 19, so kids don't drink before the age of 21. But so her friend had bought us only the finest of Bud Lights. We went inside, had some Bud Lights, and we laid in bed and we watched a 2011 instant classic, Michael Bay's Transformers: Dark of the Moon, to get in the mood to you know, because that always sets the mood, right? Little Michael Bay,
very romantic.
All right, yeah, okay. The movie ended. It was time for the deed. I fumbled around and, you know, did the condom on the banana challenge, and figured out how that all worked. You know, trampoline. We proceeded to do the deed, and when it was done, what we had realized was, she was it was her lady time. So we ruined the sheets in her brother's bed. I got nauseous and went and barfed in the toilet. So we threw the sheets in the washing machine and went and slept in the guest bed. And then we broke up like 2 months later. Oh, and the ultimate kicker is, you know, the brother, it was her brother's house, right? Her brother lived there with his partner.
Oh, no.
So I lost my virginity in a gay man's bed.
Oh, okay. Oh. I thought that was going to go a totally different way there.
No, I mean,
I thought you were about to say that you started a big fight between the brothers.
No. He was out of town. He was out of town. So it was him and his partner's townhome.
Dude. I mean, they said you never forget your first, but I mean, my God.
Yeah. There was a lot of stuff that happened. Yeah. Then she cheated on me with some other dude and we broke up like 2 months later, but I'll always have that story.
That was like a sign from the very get go of, hey, this might not be the move.
Oh, absolutely not. But do any of us know that when we're
at 19, there is nothing short of an act of God that could stop you.
Oh, no, there was nothing that was going to stop me. Now, if you put a Michael Bay movie on, I might just leave anyway.
He's getting nauseous every time.
I'd just be like, you're offering me Bud Light, a Michael Bay movie? I'm good. I'm going to leave.
I respect myself a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was it, boys. I hope it lived up to the hype.
That's a good one. I mean, most of the time, the embarrassing childhood story is, you know, I poop my pants. That's always my default. But it's awesome to get something that kind of deviates from that. And there's, you know, you're a good man, Clayback, for telling that story.
It's too good of a story not to tell. And there's so many things that just went wrong, and I should have just been like, "Nah, I'm gonna go home." But just
we're gonna call this a night.
The persistence of a horny 19-year-old just kept driving me on.
Honestly, I'm surprised that when you were at the gas station having to ask the Indian man for condoms, you were just like, I don't think this is it. This is...
Yeah, this probably isn't. Well, I mean, you had to buy them somewhere. I didn't want to go to Walmart during the middle of the day and, like, wait in line behind somebody's grandma to like have buy
the,
condoms. So
have the checkout
the other
lady
option
just stare.
Was go to this, and I don't know if you guys have been out. Well, the way I went out to Athens is different, but like I was going out on like 441, and that is a really not cool area. Like that is a super sketchy. Like I could have been mugged on the way there, which actually would have made a even better story.
Right,
because it still wouldn't have stopped
have
you.
Add some,
still would not have stopped you.
The next time you tell this story, you will have gotten mugged at the gas.
I'll have gotten mugged.
Station.
Yes, the guy will have mugged me.
Right. No, I mean, at some of those gas stations, you can like pop in a couple quarters. It's like a gumball machine, and just get one instead of having
listen,
to like.
Yeah.
Listen.
I mean, I didn't
hold up.
Like,
hold up. If you trust the gumball machine condom dispenser, you deserve whatever happens to you.
Well, how long have those been in there?
That thing has not been changed since like 1972.
I mean, who knows how long those other ones have been in there? But you know. Thank God I don't have any youngins running around that I'm aware of. So.
That is a good one. We're going to continue that off air because I have some other stories to share that are in line with Clay's that I will not reveal on here for fear of getting attacked. So to all you guys out there, thank you guys so much for tuning into the show. Doc, it was great to have you back.
Hey man, great to be back, and I have no plans on leaving again anytime soon. At least
Never.
Not during the week. So
can't leave me ever again.
But seriously, Jordy, I know you're still listening. Man, did an awesome job last week. Everybody's following Jordy, who filled in for me last week at Jordan is a Brave, and I hope everybody's following Clay too. Clay, tell them where they can find you if they're not following you already.
Well, if you want to absolutely waste one of your follows, then you can go onto the Twitter machine and follow at BravesBake. That's pretty much it. I don't really have any. I don't really do Facebook or anything anymore, and all the young hipsters do Snapchat, but I'm just on Twitter like everybody else now.
Nice.
Solid.
Nice.
About the same way I do the same thing. You have to act all prim and proper everywhere else. Not on Twitter, where you can be real. Or at least
true.
The
you
best
can
version
be
of yourself.
Ratchet as hell on Twitter.
Just create the best version of yourself, and that's the best way it can be. Well, thank you guys so much for listening to the show. When we come back next week, we've got a very special guest that we may be introducing to you guys next week. So with that, hope you guys are ready. Thank you guys so much. You know where to follow us. You know what to do. We'll catch you again next week here on the Platinum Sombrero.
Thanks, bye.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.